From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Maryland Morning. The executives of Maryland's three biggest counties are prone to brag about awards they've won for IT and websites, but now they're also talking about just snatching from each other some of their best money-saving maneuvers. We talked to Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz. Then our movie regulars, Anne Hornaday of The Washington Post and Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival, join Tom Hall to discuss the indie films you can find around town this month and a stomach-turning 3D blockbuster that suspends us between the Twin Towers. Plus, Kinky Boots won 6 Tony Awards, including Best Musical in 2013. Now the Broadway show opens the season at the Hippodrome. Tom and theater critic Jaywin Russick discuss whether you'll get a kick out of Kinky Boots. And a Baltimore story from Gil Sandler, First News.
I'm producer Jonna McCone. To catch the news, you'll need to listen to us live on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 9 o'clock on 88.1 FM in Baltimore and Frederick, 106.9 in Ocean City, and streaming online at wypr.org/listen. Now, on with the show.
Good morning. It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Just shy of half of Maryland's population is packed into its three biggest counties, Montgomery, Prince George's, and Baltimore counties. Now the chief executives of these jurisdictions have decided they're pretty smart about some aspects of government and could get smarter by copying each other and trading tips. Smarter translates into more cost-effective and less pressure to raise taxes or fees. So right now, as we're starting this show, Baltimore County's executive and a few of his top staffers are sitting down in Rockville with the Montgomery County executive and top staffers to talk information technology and how to do it smarter. Knowing we couldn't catch him for a live interview this morning, we sat down with Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz yesterday, and I asked what he expects to get out of these conversations.
Well, Baltimore County and Montgomery County are nationally recognized as leaders in digital government, and it's using technology as a way to deliver services more effectively and efficiently while also saving money. And both counties have been ranked among the top 10 digital governments, which is a national award, for 4 consecutive years, and each has won dozens of National Association of County Achievement Awards for particular projects. So we have had a decent relationship, all Montgomery County, Prince George's County, and Baltimore County during the General Assembly session, because we have very similar issues as the three largest counties of this state. And we are large counties in population. Each of our counties are larger individually than the population of 4 states. So we face a lot of issues that other jurisdictions in the state do not. For example, school construction. All 3 of us suffer what I call the twin dilemma of aging infrastructure and rising enrollment, and we're forced to kind of pour a lot of capital dollars to meet those needs. But we've also found that we have similar approaches, particularly between Montgomery and Baltimore County, with the use of technology. So in Baltimore County, we have used our Office of Information Technology. I'll refer to it as the hub in which all other departments are spokes to reach that.
So there's like one county IT department.
It's a centralized IT department. So previously, before I took office, each department had its own IT aspect to it, and we mainstreamed that and brought that centralized and utilized the larger pool as a way to better accomplish tasks. This has been so successful that we have now reached out to quasi-independent government agencies in the county, such as the library and the school system, to help start merging some of their IT functions with ours. So, for example, the school system's data center was in need of repair and replacement, and rather than expend $15 million for construction of a new facility, and because we had downsized all of our equipment storage space by having the most modern equipment, we actually had surplus space in this environmentally controlled area to store the school system's data center. In terms of the library, we have brought their IT folks into general government, and that allows more effective use of personnel. So, for example, some days the former library IT department wouldn't be as busy, and other days they would be overwhelmed. Well, by merging their staff with ours, if they have something that's overwhelming on one particular day, we can bring our entire department over there to help out, so to speak. But on days when they weren't as busy, they can be productive doing other things in other parts of the government.
Okay, so that's something you think Montgomery County might want to look at to copy or to see what you're doing that they could learn something from.
Well, obviously, you know, I'm pitching what we do and they're going to pitch what they do. But more importantly, we are bringing the staffs there. So this is an opportunity for our geek squad to meet their geek squad and let them share ideas.
The head of your geek squad, Rob Stradling, director of IT, said I should think about these conversations as an opportunity to cut and paste and shamelessly steal from each other. So what's something you just laid out an overall structure, but is there something smaller and perhaps more understandable to most of us that you could imagine Montgomery wanting to steal from Baltimore County?
Well, I can't. I haven't yet been briefed by Montgomery officials as to what, in fact, they do that we are not doing.
I'm not asking what you want to steal from them, or vice versa.
But I would tell you, I'm just proud. And I hope Montgomery is already doing some of these things. But the fact that we have centralized our departments, we've made great use of fiber build out throughout the county to save money. So our county is all on voice over internet protocol, so we don't pay for landlines at all now.
You basically generate your own internet connection. You're not buying it from Verizon.
It's ours. We own the fiber, and that has allowed us to reduce our annual operation cost by more than $2 million. It's increased bandwidth and also provides network redundancy for all of our county agencies. And we've used the same aspect to now wire all of our schools for our students using our private fiber.
That's Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz here on Maryland Morning, 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about top-level conversations among Maryland's three big counties to see what they call smart government solutions. When do you pull Prince George's County Executive Rashern Baker into these conversations?
We are scheduling a date with them, and we're going to review a series of topics that they are interested in talking about. So we approached Montgomery about IT because we knew they were pretty strong in this area as we were, and we want to make sure that we're both continue to be on the cutting edge. We anticipate a reciprocal visit from Montgomery to Baltimore County on a different subject, and then we're going to establish one or two conferences with Prince George's County. Another part that is interesting is not necessarily IT, but it's making use of the skills of our information technology specialists, and that's what we call operational excellence. This is where our IT department works with agencies and particular programs that are identified to find how we can improve operations, recommend alternative practices, and implement changes. So, for example, we took the police department and we evaluated their workload versus their staffing levels, and as a result, we were able to realign the non-emergency services. So we became more efficient. There were times when we didn't need as many police officers on duty based upon the work demand.
And that was something you figured out
through the IT department, this operational excellence.
I'm sorry Montgomery County Executive Ike Leggett isn't with us, because I wanted to ask him about this, but I'll go ahead and ask you. The Montgomery County website, which I'm told is award-winning.
By the way, very transparent,
very, very something that people can drill down to get data out of, et cetera. I'm sorry, yes?
Well, I had to put another shameless plug here. 2 years ago, they were ahead of us in a national ranking, and I said to my folks, we need to get better. So just this past year, Baltimore County was named the number two website in the country.
Duly congratulated. There is a part of their website, or actually a it links to a whole presentation about their innovation program. And it says it's looking for ideas that can be implemented and measured, but also ideas that are experimental and thus inherently risky. It talks about creating, quote, a safe place to fail, close quote. Now, I realize that's not talking about these smart conversations, but that's what I want to understand. Are you envisioning the kind of conversations that you chief executives, you county executives will be having as so cutting edge that they may fail? Or are these ideas where the kinks have been worked out, they're all tested, it's time to trade them?
Well, that's obviously up to the particular county executive in terms of giving direction. Our approach in Baltimore County is not to be experimental, but to be effective in what we do. We are innovative, but we try and make sure that it's a proven technology that will have demonstrated monetary savings or increase in efficiency. We're not afraid to copy. For example, we copied UPS, and now all of our employees who are mobile-based use route optimization schedules. We know where they are at all times. If we have a code inspector who has to make several stops throughout the day, our route optimization will make them allow them to travel the most efficient route possible so that they can save time and be more effective.
Why should citizens care about this, or should they? Is this all behind the screen and nobody should care?
Two things. One, we deliver services more effectively and efficiently. And two, we save taxpayer dollars.
Okay. Your next topic, you said beyond IT. You mentioned funding of schools. How is that something that you all need to discuss, funding of school building?
Well, I am interested in talking to Montgomery County because they appear to be able to construct school buildings at a lower square footage rate than we do in Baltimore County. And I do want to learn more about what they do and what materials they use and whether they think that has been a successful program long term. So that's a good opportunity for conversation, especially since Baltimore County is embarking on this or is in the middle of a $1.3 billion Schools for Our Future program that's going to eliminate all current and projected overcrowding and modernizing our schools. So it's a tremendous financial commitment, and if we can figure out a way to do it more effectively, I'd like to learn about that.
Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz. Right now, he's huddling with Montgomery County Executive Isaiah Leggett and top staff to come up with what they call smart government solutions, trading tips for cost-effective government. They might literally share software code, like Baltimore County's Trail Finder searchable app to find walking paths. We've got a link to it on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay tuned to 88.1. Movies ahead.
If you want to join in on the conversation, go to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, and make a comment. We'd love to hear from you. You can also check out our audio archives there and learn more about what you just heard, or even make a pledge to support local programming. That's all at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Now, back to the show.
Thank you, Mr. Sterner. Good morning, everybody. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. I have good news, I have great news, and I have bad news. So is that all right, Nathan? Can I give this to you in this order? So the good news is it's the first Friday of the month. So that means it's time for the Maryland Morning Movie Mayhem.
That is good news.
That is good news. The great news is that Jed Dietz from the Maryland Film Festival and Hornaday from the Washington Post are both here to talk and to sort of oversee the mayhem.
Great news, although I kind of expect that with the movie Mayhem.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes Jed's...
It's still great.
Sometimes
yes.
Jed's, you know, jetting off to some exotic locale, you know, calling in from... You know, all sorts
I
of
just want to point out, last time, Miss Hornaday was out of the country.
That's right. She was out of the country.
Barely.
But here's the bad news. Having just announced that Jed Dietz and Ann Hornaday are here, this causes immediate dancing in the streets, which could lead to traffic congestion. So I'm just trying to, before you
it
leave
is,
your
it
home.
It is kind of wet out there, if you want to dance in the rain,
that's right.
Go
dancing
for
in
it.
The rain. Singing in the rain, dancing in the rain. So we're going to talk about some movies this morning. We joke around, but it's a terribly... disconcerting, another sad day with this horrible situation in Umpqua Community College in Roseburg, Oregon, the 294th mass shooting in the last 274 days. So let's talk about the better notions of the human condition, people who do things of great beauty. And the first movie I want to talk about, which is not out quite yet, but it's going to be out in about a week. It's called The Walk, this is a Robert Zemeckis.
So it is out on IMAX screen. So it's at Cinemark and White Marsh, but only on IMAX screens.
Oh, already? Okay.
Yes.
But it's regular theaters next week. Then.
Yes.
Okay, great. So this is a fellow named Philippe Petit, who in the 1970s, in 1974, strung a wire between the two towers of the World Trade Center. In New York, and walked across it. I mean, it's just amazing. There was a documentary, Ann Hornaday, about this that was directed by James Marsh called Man on Wire. This is a fictional adaptation of this story. For folks who have seen the Man on Wire, how does this compare to the documentary?
Well, Man on Wire, I would qualify as a masterpiece. I mean, it was just an absolutely beautiful piece of nonfiction filmmaking, and really sort of transcended just the mere chronicle of the tale to really engage issues of the World Trade Center and the Twin Towers and the loss of that. And Marsh really delicately never hit that head on, but he just sort of made it an elegy and a celebration of that place without ever really explicitly invoking it. This is a more mainstream dramatization by Zemeckis, who's a much more mainstream kind of a guy. It's very much geared toward families. It's got a really lyrical, playful tone. The towers are invoked much more explicitly visually. But it works. I mean, I think the two can exist side by side very, very happily. And the way that he's filmed it in IMAX 3D is spectacular. I mean, he just makes it an immersive spectacle. And once you get up there on that wire with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who plays Petit, I mean, it transcends storytelling to become an experience, a bona fide emotional, physical experience.
You had a very catchy turn of phrase in your review of it in the Washington Post. You called it an overeager pop-up book of a movie.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, I had a few, I wouldn't even say misgivings. I mean, my reservations are really with Zemeckis as a filmmaker. I think he's not subtle. You know, he's not subtle in terms of, he tends to kind of overdo things. But that can be part of the spectacle and part of the fun, and I appreciate that. And that's just an issue of personal taste. But I really do think it provides a lot of audience value.
Mm-hmm. And Jed, for the only time that I can remember in all the years we've known each other, you sent me the trailer of this movie. You said, you got to check this trailer. It's unbelievable. I mean, I don't think that's ever happened before. So you're pretty psyched up about the trailer.
Yeah, and I agree. I agree with everything Anne said about these two films. I mean, I think Man on Wire is really masterful and should be seen alongside The Walk again, even if you had seen it before. And it won the Academy Award for documentary that year. But I do think what Zemeckis has pulled off is to take this act of, you know, it seems like lunacy to some of us, right? But real artistry. Coming from an unbelievable commitment to that piece of art. And Zemeckis shows that to you and involves you in it in a way that no other medium could have done. And I think very few other directors actually could have done the way he's done it. And I think, you know, people came out of the screening we did on Sunday with Tom Rothman from Sony Pictures, who's the head of the studio, who they're releasing it under the TriStar brand. And everybody came out feeling both exhilarated and exhausted, physically exhausted.
Yeah.
And that's an experience you don't get to have very often, you know, and he's really delivered it to you. I think Philippe did it on the wire when it happened for the people on the street watching. And now Zemeckis has brought that to you in a total gut level way. And it's to see it on the biggest possible screen you can get to in 3D, mm-hmm. because it's the best use of all this technology I've ever seen.
So it is a super techie movie, I would
Very,
assume.
And, you know? And I agree. And it's funny because I was at that screening on Sunday, and Tom Rothman, like me, said he's not a big fan of 3D, nor am I. I think it's usually a gimmick, and we can talk about that with the Martian, but in this case, it has been used as a genuine aesthetic element that is additive. You know, that really does provide, I think, aesthetic dimension and again that audience value that makes it worthwhile. Mm-hmm. So
let's talk about the Martian. Mm-hmm. The plot is a guy gets abandoned on Mars,
yeah. right?
And then they have to bring him home.
Yeah, it's very simple. But what's interesting to me about these two movies opening this week is that, like The Walk, it provides this experience. I mean, and I think now with more sort of storytelling migrating to episodic television and all of these great artists, film artists going to TV, what do the movies have left? Well, they have these immersive, spectacular experiences that we often associate kind of with comic book movies and superhero movies, but in the hands of really great storytellers and film technicians, they can just become wonderful. You know, it's like a return to the great values of big Hollywood movie making of yore. In this case, the director is Ridley Scott, whom we associate with Blade Runner and Alien. Those are kind of downbeat, cold visions of the future. But in this case, he's working with Drew Goddard, a screenwriter who's adapted this wonderful novel by Andy Weir that's very lighthearted and again, playful and self-deprecatory while being incredibly worshipful of the science and the grounded science that this is all based on. Matt Damon plays the Martian. He carries the film beautifully as this kind of confident but vulnerable astronaut. And it's just terrific. I mean, the whole thing works just beautifully. And Scott brings that kind of sense of magnificence and those visual that visual grandeur that he's known for, but with the more lighthearted tone, it works beautifully. It's a lot of fun.
And you mentioned in your review in the post that it was an interesting coincidence that NASA appeared to have been, you know, engaged as part of the PR for this movie, because Mars very much in the news,
yeah.
Because it seems that they've discovered water.
That's true. And part of the plot point is how is he going to live, and part of that is creating his own water and his own food. So whether they're working that, I mean, it certainly is an average for NASA, but it's one of those sort of old school movies that it's, you know, you could really see kids going to this and becoming turned on to science and maybe wanting to go into space and like they would go to The Walk and maybe want to try this. I mean, these are really, these are movies that honor process, they honor creativity and resourcefulness, and I just think it's terrific that young people and people of all ages can go to this together and be inspired.
Although we should remind families, you know, when you see The Walk, kids, don't try this at home.
No, yes, exactly. Please don't try that at home. True. But do something, you know, bold and self-expressive of your own.
Right.
It's wonderful.
So Jed Dietz, a couple of weeks ago on the 19th of September, Stanley Nelson was in town to talk at length about his new documentary about the Black Panthers. And he was planning basically to camp out in the Charles Theater for most of the day and talk after several of the screenings. In the middle of the 1 o'clock screening, the police evacuated the theater because there were some threats of gun violence posted online. As I understand it, the next day the screenings continued without incident. Let's talk about the movie itself, this documentary about the Black Panthers and Mr. Nelson's contribution.
Yeah. So he has worked very hard on this. He's a wonderful documentary filmmaker who's made a series of just stunning movies, Freedom Summer, Freedom Riders, the Jonestown Massacre film. He's won many awards. This is the first time he's really had a theatrical release, and he's worked very hard to be at theaters and participate in Q&As, which I can tell you from the festival screenings are extraordinary. The Q&As are really fantastic. And both because of this subject matter and because of this great artist, of Stanley Nelson. So he came in Wednesday night before the weekend. So he did appear at at screenings. I went and saw him before the intro, and then he did some others during the weekend. He couldn't do the Sunday ones because he had to go to Philadelphia to do the same thing. But it won the weekend, you know, and gross box office was the biggest thing at the Charles that weekend. And it's, you know, any chance you get to see it, I would say go.
And it's still at the Charles, so yes, folks do have a chance to check it out. How about a movie called Prophets Pray? This is a documentary. It's narrated by a guy named Nick Cave, and this is about the fundamentalist Church of the Latter-day Saints, mm-hmm, and the person who's the head of that. What's this movie about, Anne?
Yeah, this is a really gripping piece of investigative filmmaking, looking into how this, I would call him a cult leader named Warren Jeffs, manipulated this community and proceeded to just abuse his power unspeakably. And it's, you know, it's Jed and I just attended the opening night of an investigative film symposium and film series and conference that's happening in D.C. right now about the intersection of investigative journalism and filmmaking. And this is one of the prime examples of how these two forms are coming together to do really, really important expository work. It's riveting filmmaking.
Yeah, and you're a fan as well, Jed?
Oh, very much so. It was at the festival this year and started its run, its life as a film at Sundance. It marketed life. And it gets you inside the head of a messianic guy, and you can see the damage that can be done in the name of very good things in religion. And it's a mutant of the Church of Latter-day Saints, and you can see how damaging that can be, and it in politics or in religion. But the filmmaking, I mean, the access that they get, they're footage of him in jail. He's in federal prison, will stay there for the rest of his life. And you know, interviews of people who were in the cult and have gotten out. I mean, it's really a revelatory film.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about one that you've seen as well called Sleeping with Other People. It opens tomorrow at the Charles, directed by Leslie Headland, who is a native of Maryland.
Yep. And she directed The Bachelorette. This also was at Sundance this year. You know, it's got Alison Brie and Jason Sudeikis. It's about two sex addicts, and that sort of sums up what you should expect going in. It's reaching for outrageousness, and if that's the kind of humor that you find wonderful or you like those actors, it's something you should see.
There you go. And again, kids, don't try this at home. How about the movie, the new movie that's currently at the Charles with, when I say new, it's the new Lily Tomlin movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Grandma, and I guess this was written for her.
Yes.
I mean, the director, Paul Weitz, who did About a Boy and stuff like that, just basically, I read an article that said that his audience in this was an audience of one. He wanted Lily Tomlin to do this movie. But does it succeed?
Oh, I thought it succeeded just beautifully. And it's, for one thing, it's a chance to see her. You know, most of us remember her as a comedian, but then we were also sort of ambushed when she turned out to be a really gifted dramatic actress in Nashville, you know, in her work with Robert Altman over the years. And this is a return to that, you know. It's a dramatic role with a lot of comic touches, but just what a great character actress she is. But the kind of the galvanizing moment in the movie, it's about a grandmother and a granddaughter, and it's kind of a day in the life while they search for, I don't want to give too much away, but they're on kind of a little mini road trip through L.A. that involves the grandmother character revisiting a lot of her old friends and associates. And one of them is played by Sam Elliott in this absolutely electrifying scene that the two of them have. There's just this perfect little chamber piece. I mean, if it's just for that scene, it's worth going to see this movie just to see these two people relate to one another and act beautifully.
I love Grace and Frankie, too, on Netflix. It's the vehicle now with Lily Tomlin,
right,
and Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
And it's a great setup. You know, their husbands are law partners, and they end up being lovers, and then the two of them are thrown together. They're just, you know, she's a terrific
artist. She is a treasure. She's just a treasure.
Yeah, good for her. You also wrote a very kind review about The Intern, which
yes,
is also at the Landmark. Mr. De Niro now,
yeah,
I don't know how old he is, but it's quite something. So, you know, we'll give him a
good
little
old
nod.
Bob. I mean, it's Bob in a cuddly teddy bear. You know, he's kind of morphed into this this teddy bear character, and it's a very appealing, surprising little movie. Not perfect by any stretch, but there's a lot to value there.
And it really underscores what a really terrific actress Anne Hathaway is,
true.
Too.
Yeah.
So plenty of stuff to see while the deluge arrives.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Jed Dietz, Anne Hornaday, always a pleasure. We'll see you next month.
Thanks so much.
We'll have a link to all the stuff going on at the Maryland Film Festival and a link to the Anne Hornaday's essays in the Washington Post at our website, WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Lots more coming up. Stick around.
Do you have thoughts on that segment you just heard? Email us at mdmorning@wypr.org or find us on Twitter. We're at Maryland Morning. Now back to the show.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Theater critic Jay Wynn Russick joins me in the studio. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Tom.
So you have been to see Kinky Boots. It's at the Hippodrome. It closes on Sunday. This is the musical by Harvey Fierstein and Cyndi Lauper. That's one of two things. That's either a match made in heaven or a just plain kinky weird match. I mean, these are two very enormously talented people. Of course, Harvey Fierstein with this huge pedigree on Broadway. Cyndi Lauper, not so much, but she's a famous figure. So how does this all work out?
Well, actually, Tom, it's a little bit of both, a little bit kinky and a little bit made in heaven. The New York Times called Harvey Fierstein and Cyndi Lauper a work marriage straight out of a camp fantasy.
A camp fantasy, perfect.
Kinky Boots is partly a show about a drag queen. And Harvey Fierstein, of course, was a drag queen early in his career, and he wrote Torch Song Trilogy partly about that, and he wrote the book for the musical Kajo Foal. So he's a natural for Kinky Boots. For Cyndi Lauper, this is her first Broadway musical, but her score won a Tony. She was the first female songwriter to win a Tony for best score by herself without a partner. So they may be a little strange, but this is a musical in which strange really works. I also have to say, besides having two of the most distinctive viewpoints on Broadway or anywhere, they also have two of the most distinctive voices. I came across an interview with the two of them. Kinky Boots is set in a shoe factory, and I brought an excerpt of the two of them breaking into the old ad for Buster Brown shoes. Remember Buster Brown shoes?
I do remember Buster Brown shoes.
This was during a New York Times interview, so here they are.
And remember, look in the telephone book for the boy who sells the shoe with a picture of the boy and the dog inside, and inside the shoe it would come to life. Right? So I figured, wow, that's
low. Have a boy inside, whatever I mean, place
for a boy to hide. Yeah.
My shoe have a dog there too.
A boy and a dog and a foot in a shoe.
Well, that's wild. Harvey Fierstein and Cyndi Lauper singing the ad for Buster Brown shoes. They are the co-creators of Kinky Boots, which is at the Hippodrome Theater. So Kinky Boots is based on a movie, but the movie wasn't called Kinky Boots, right?
No, it was called Kinky Boots. It just wasn't a really well-known movie. It came out in 2005. The movie is based on a true story about a family-owned shoe factory that falls on hard times. You could say, Tom, that it becomes down at heel.
You could say that. I myself would never say that, but you could. That's
correct. I definitely stoop that low. So Charlie, the young owner who takes over this shoe factory after his father dies, decides that he can save this company by making stiletto-heeled boots for drag queens. In real life...
There's a niche market for it.
Absolutely. That's what he's looking for. In real life, it only saved the factory for a few years. But I watched the movie, Tom, and I found lots of reasons that it would make a good musical. I mean, of course, you've got this drag queen character, Lola, who's the inspiration for the stiletto boots, and she's a headliner in a drag club. So right there, there's a built-in performance aspect. But the movie also has lots of other places where you can envision songs, and the stage show has songs in those places. For example, there's a scene in the movie, it's one of the quieter scenes actually, when Charlie and Lola both admit that they didn't turn out the way their fathers hoped that they would. And it's a scene that cried out for a song, and here's what Cyndi Lauper did with it.
I'm not my father's son. I'm not the image of what he dreamed of. With the strength of Sparta and the patience of Job.
Stephen Booth and Kyle Taylor Parker singing Not My Father's Son. It's from the touring production of Kinky Boots. Now, the actor who played Lola, the drag queen, on Broadway, won a Tony Award. How does Kyle Taylor Parker do in this touring production.
Well, it turns out Kyle Taylor Parker also played the role later on Broadway. It's a really showy role, but it's a role with a lot of heart in it. And Kyle Taylor Parker is a really expressive singer. His first song is a production number in the drag club, and he's backed up by a half a dozen other drag queens. They're a really tight ensemble. They have a lot of style. They have a lot of sass and some very athletic moves. The choreography and direction are by Jerry Mitchell, and one of my favorite numbers actually has them dancing on a conveyor belt in the factory. Mitchell knows how to make the drag performers look slick, and these really do, and Kyle Taylor Parker is fantastic. But he also knows how to take the factory workers, including Charlie, the boss, who look a little bit awkward or not real comfortable in this milieu or dancing. So it's a real triumph when they get into the spirit of things.
Good for them. Dancing on a conveyor belt. There's like shades of Lucille Ball or something. How about the rest of the cast? Mr. Parker seems to be doing a great job. How about everybody else?
The rest of the cast is fine. Charlie is supposed to be this kind of namby-pamby character. He doesn't want to run the family shoe business. He doesn't know what he wants to do. He's kind of Lola's lackluster foil. But he matures in the course of the musical, and Stephen Booth lets us see that. He has a big down-in-the-dumps number that he just nails when the character hits rock bottom. And I also want to give a shout out, Tom, to an actress named Lindsay Nicole Chambers. She plays the factory worker who gives Charlie the idea to try something new, and she falls in love with him. And I brought a snippet of her big song. This is a very Cyndi Lauper sounding song, and you'll hear the actress really sells it.
I've been here before, I might come back for more. Another chapter in the history of wrong guys. A limp like cluster bowl, but now you're changing into someone I just can't ignore.
That's Lindsay Nicole Chambers in the touring production of Kinky Boots. This is one of the newer Broadway shows in the Hippodrome season. Does it get the Hippodrome season off to a good kick and start?
It does. It's an enjoyable show with a very nice message about keeping an open mind and accepting others. There's nothing particularly earth-shattering. It's fairly predictable, except perhaps for the discovery that Cyndi Lauper actually can write a darn good Broadway score.
Yeah, good for her.
Tom,
girls just want to have fun.
Well, that's,
you know?
That's exactly what I was going to say. If you go to this show because you just want to have fun, you won't be disappointed.
There you go. Fair enough. And I didn't mean to steal that brilliant line, but you know, two great minds think alike,
exactly.
Clearly. All right. Theater critic Jay Wynn Russick, always great to see you. Thanks.
Great to be here.
Kinky Boots will be at the Hippodrome through Sunday. Come to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, for all the details. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
Maryland Morning is an original production
of your public radio,
WYPR,
in Baltimore.
The show is produced by Jonna McCone
and Connor Graham.
We have production help from
Scott Seiss.
Nathan Sterner directs and engineers.
Coffee for our guests provided by Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville. On the web at ZEKESCoffee.com.
I'm Tom Hall.
And I'm Sheila Cast. This day in Maryland history is my last day hosting Maryland Morning. History is too grand a word. I'm just moving across the hall to follow in Dan Roderick's footsteps, hosting Midday. Tom Hall, whom we all know and love, will be in charge of Maryland Morning. So this will continue to be the place and time to hear smart interviews about what's going on in Maryland and why it's unfolding the way it is. Tom and I launched Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast almost 9.5 years ago. I promised on that first show that our focus would be entirely on Maryland and that we'd cover, quote, news, politics, science, education, families, history, plus arts, culture, and other ways to have fun, close quote. I think we've done that. When we could, we dug deep, like our year-long series about inequality in the Baltimore region called The Lines Between Us. That series won one of the most prestigious awards in broadcast journalism, a DuPont Columbia Award. Just as important to us were the comments of some listeners who said the series helped them rethink what's fair. I'm grateful to all the interview subjects who so patiently shared their ideas in that series and in all our reporting. Scientists, authors, advocates, historians, so many sources who have taught me so much. I've been blessed with wonderful producers who shared my enthusiasm for poking into stories which might not have been getting much attention, especially stories from a century or two or three ago. I've had the most competent, quick-witted, and flexible director and engineer any show host could wish for in Nathan Sterner. I'm going to miss working closely with Nathan, and I'll miss working closely with Tom, although I know I'll hear them both doing great journalism in the mornings. I'm going to miss our loyal Maryland Morning listeners, your comments, your feedback, your suggestions. I hope I'll be in touch with many of you through midday. I'm Sheila Cast. Have a great weekend.